This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, August 26, 2021. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in New York, working from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. And Taylor, there's only one way to start the show today. Hallelujah. That's right. Hallelujah. Because the Baltimore Orioles losing streak of 19 consecutive games is over. Taylor, describe what it was like in your apartment last night.
Well, Buster, it was a muted celebration because I felt like it was like winning like a battle of attrition, and it really wasn't even that big of a win. It was like we got out and didn't lose all the tanks, you know, and we'll live to maybe fight another day, but it could be worse tomorrow. I know I said on the podcast that I was, you know, rooting for this losing streak to continue, and in a way, I kind of was, and because it was just like a horrific spectacle to watch, and like if they're just going to keep losing, like why not be the best losers of all time? But happy for everyone involved, from the players, the coaching staff, the fans. Maybe not Mike Elias because this is what he wanted, I guess. Brandon Hyde looked like he was going to cry last night in his postgame press conference. So happy for all the guys, and you know, hopefully they don't start another losing streak again against the Rays this weekend.
That's exactly right. You know, really happy for the individual players who are suffering through this because this is hard. And once you start getting up to numbers like that, it's absolutely brutal. In the year of Shohei Ohtani, the Orioles hit three homers off the Angels' two-way player and came back from a deficit, busting out in the eighth inning.
0-1, the set, the pitch, and a swing and a fly ball, left field deep, this one back, in the corner, it bounces off the fence, one run in, Urias right behind, Gutierrez held up, Austin Hayes punches the air as he drives in two more runs, it's a 9-6 Orioles lead.
That from 105.7 The Fan, the Orioles win 10-6, here was the last out.
Santander backing up, he's there. He's got it. And for the first time in a long time, as a matter of fact, for the first time since August 2nd, we can say the Orioles are winners, Ben.
Yep, and there's a smile by Brandon Hyde. We hadn't seen him smile in a long time.
That, of course, the Orioles television network, Scott Garceau, Ben McDonald's. Here was Brandon Hyde after the game.
Sitting in my office, and I walk outside, and there was an aroma coming into the hallway, and I saw Mancini in his mustache and asked him, are we smoking some different type of cigarettes or what's happening in our clubhouse? And then he explained it to me. And I think sage tomorrow. Who knows?
Wow.
Burning sage, Buster. Anything to get the job done.
Man, Brandon Hyde, very happy after the game yesterday. A couple of Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers, spoke definitively yesterday about when their careers will end. As Yadier Molina's one-year extension for 2022 is made official, he said next year will be his last season. We'll be talking about that with Doug Glanville, with Paul Imbiakides coming up. Miguel Cabrera was on ESPN yesterday, and he talked about when he plans to retire.
2 more years, that's it.
That's it?
Yeah. I got my right knee is like really, really bad, so I need to take care of this in the off season. I need to prepare myself to the next season. So I say 2 more years, you know, I think that's enough. I think I'm be happy with my 20 years in the release if I make it. So I would say thank God for giving me this opportunity, but I say 2 more years and I'm done.
He, of course, just a handful of hits away from 3,000. He'll get that probably early next season. And we should note he's under contract for 2 more years for about $32 million a year. Probably not a coincidence. Alex Bregman, out since June, was activated by the Astros yesterday, and he had a hand in their victory.
2-1. Ground ball off Pyamps, kicks to the right. Pyamps, bare hands, throws to first in time for the out. Didn't go home with it, and the run scores as Bregman comes home, and the Astros win it in the bottom of the 10th, 6-5. Why in the world would Pyamps go to first?
That was Robert Ford, KBME, 790 AM. Yeah, the final score there, 6-5. The Rays played the Phillies. These two teams tied at 4-4 in the top of the ninth inning. Zach Wheeler on the mound, potentially going for a Cy Young Award. This is what happened.
Now the 0-2 to Mejia. Swing and drive. Deep right field. Goodbye. Into the second deck. Francisco Mejia with a three-run home run. He gets them all in. It's 7-4 Rays.
Dave Wills, 620 WDAE. The Rays win 7-4. The Mets played host to the Giants at Citi Field last night, hanging on the fringe of the National League East in the wild card races, and Taijuan Walker was dealing. But there was an infield hit and then a bloop hit to open the seventh inning. With Walker at 74 pitches, Luis Rojas emerged from the dugout to relieve him. Walker was livid on the mound. Aaron Loop came in, not having allowed an extra base hit to a left-handed hitter the entire season. Left-handed hitter Brandon Crawford did this.
The pitch is pulled into right field, and that's going to be a hit. One hop up against the wall. Conforto's chasing after it. Bryant's in to score. Right behind him, Alex Dickerson. He will score ahead of the throw. Giants go ahead 3-2.
And the Giants would go on to win this game. At the moment that happened, Taijuan Walker, watching from the dugout, glanced toward the other end of the dugout where Luis Rojas was standing and then fired a water bottle. He was not happy. After the game, Luis Rojas talked about that decision.
We had Loop up just in case anything crazy happened. I mean, we know he's throwing a really good game. One hit, it's a homer only. But then the two plays dictated the decision, basically. Running to the first and second, no out. You have a guy like Brandon Crawford at the plate, who's our best hitter. And we have probably one of the best lefties in the league, in Aaron Loop, and it's come and done a good job for us. So we went with the matchup last third of the game, right? Seven inning up a run. We felt that Loop was going to come in and probably get that out.
Mets fans on social media going nuts about that decision. At the end of the day, at the end of the loss, the Mets, seven games out of first place in the National League East, seven games out in the wild card race. Earlier in the day, Jacob deGrom was throwing in the outfield at Citi Field after an MRI showed improvement on the right forearm tightness that has sidelined him since July 7th. Noah Syndergaard will begin a minor league rehabilitation assignment with Brooklyn today. The Brewers face the Reds, and Jace Peterson got a big hit.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a line drive left center field. Aquino back. It's over his head and off the wall. It's going to bounce on the warning track and go over the fence for an automatic double. How many times has Jace Peterson come through in that situation? Brewers have a 2-0 lead.
That from 620 WTMJ. The Brewers on their way to a 4-1 lead. But the game of the day yesterday, undoubtedly in San Diego, what a crazy game. They were tied 1-1 through 9 innings. And then they played 5 straight extra innings without either team scoring through the 14th. The Dodgers scored 2 in the 15th, and then Fernando Tatis Jr. tied the game in the bottom of the 15th. Then in the 16th inning, A.J. Pollock did this.
Breaking ball hit high in the air, deep center field, back on to Grisham at the wall, and it's gone! A.J. Pollock powers the Dodgers back into the lead. A 2-run, 16th inning blast, number 16 on the season. It's the Dodgers 5 and the Padres 3.
That would be the final score. This game took 5 hours and 49 minutes. It featured 489 pitches by 19 pitchers who stranded 35 combined runners. That from Bernie Wilson, the great Bernie Wilson of the Associated Press last night. And one other note, Major League Baseball announced its postseason schedule. The AL Division Series will start on October 7th, that after the wildcard game on October 5th, the National League wildcard game the following day. The last game, Game 7, potentially could be on November 3rd, the latest finish for a World Series since 2009. Taylor, what do you got?
Buster, I know this is a baseball podcast, but let's not forget, Week 0, college football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. Well, dear listeners, right now in your podcast feed, our friends at ESPN Daily wanted us to throw something in there they thought you might enjoy. It's about how Fanatics outbid trading card giant Topps for the right to make cards with Major League Baseball. It also made deals with the NBA and NFL. And this major shakeup in sports memorabilia is worth billions of dollars. They're talking about collectibles on ESPN Daily today. We're going to hear about reporting from the Fanatics coup, plus the Honus Wagner card that's sold for $6.6 million. We talked about that last week, and I heard Buster mention it on the Sunday Night Baseball podcast. So check it out. If you are interested, it is in your podcast feed right now.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Doug Glanville is a former player who also is an Emmy-nominated writer and a professor at UConn. Doug, how you doing today?
Buster, always a pleasure. Doing really well.
Always love talking with you. I'm curious, first off, just right off the bat, when we got word yesterday, Yadier Molina announcing that next year is going to be his last year, my initial reaction was, I'll believe it when I see it. Because it seems exactly. Like he's one of those guys we could get, you know, halfway through next year, and all of a sudden Yadi might be talking about playing in 2023. Am I off base and just kind of wondering about that?
Well, if there's a player that might rethink it, it's Yadier Molina. You know, you could tell it's like in his DNA, in his bloodstream, that he's a ball player, he's a catcher. He's like, you know, don't give me any other glove but a catcher's mitt. And you know, he continues to just compile greatness. And I always think of him when he was much younger, because I played in Puerto Rico with his brother Benji as a teammate of mine, Mayagüez. And we ended up winning a championship one year. And I kept hearing about, you know, Jose, one brother. And then it's like, oh, no, but there's Yadi, you know. And so he had an aura already when, you know, I was getting to the big leagues. I knew about this kid in Puerto Rico, about his aptitude, his knowledge, his passion, his leadership, all the things that aren't necessarily quantifiable, but as he's proved throughout his career, have just created immeasurable success for his organization and just the position, just redefining it.
So I didn't plan on telling this story, but I will. When you talked about his passion, his personality, you know, as a reporter working for ESPN for a lot of years, it's just kind of like, oh boy, you got to navigate around this. But on the other part, you know, having siblings myself, I absolutely love this story and what it says about him and his passion. Early in his career, Benji hit a triple, and I think it was on SportsCenter. They put that the images of Benji hitting a triple to the backdrop of the sound from Chariots of Fire or some kind of music. You know, Benji was not fast. And so word came down moving forward, like Yadi doesn't talk to ESPN. Yadi doesn't talk to ESPN. Now, he has subsequently, I know, done things with Eduardo Perez, Marley Rivera. You know, I've talked to him a couple times, but on camera for years and years and years, that was his perspective. And the funny thing was, and you know, Benji was like, I don't care. Like Benji after that was fine. But I always kind of loved the idea that Yadi was sticking up for his big brother.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I know Benji pretty well, and I would text him in the off season. And I do remember the triple issue. And yeah, I wasn't thrilled for sure. But I also know that they were truly a band of brothers. And I think the culture of Yadier Molina playing with these older brothers who were receivers and teachers, and although he might have excelled or surpassed them in certain ways on the field, numbers wise, they were always, you know, his big brothers. And I think that brotherhood tone that was set from the days of Puerto Rico translates to how he works as a teammate. I mean, he really embraces his teammates as brothers and fights for them and sees he has to protect them. I remember Brandon Phillips coming to home plate and tapping his shin guard sort of like after he trash talked the city of St. Louis. He was like, no, I'm not having that. Like, I mean, that's the type of guardian he is. And that's not something that just like magically happened. Those are the intangibles. That's what he's brought through his sort of the culture of his brotherhood growing up. And I think he's just authentically himself, which is why he was made to be a catcher and made to be a major league one at that.
And you actually delved into an area that I wanted to get into, which is the value of someone like Molina which is going to be important with his Hall of Fame case, because if you look at the raw offensive numbers, there, I think the analytic community is going to downplay his Hall of Fame candidacy. If you look at his overall WAR for his career, he's 41.9, according to Baseball Reference. Same neighborhood as Gary Gaetti and Doug DeCinces and Andy Benz, like guys who had terrific careers, but they're not Hall of Famers. And I find myself all the time saying, yeah, but that doesn't fully capture what his value on the field is in terms of the impact of his defense. You know, when I've talked about it, I compared it to a shutdown cornerback, Darrell Revis, Deion Sanders back in the day, because of what he's done behind the plate. Doug, during the course of his career, 18-year period, opponents have attempted 1,373 steals against St. Louis. 1,373. The next closest team is more than 400 more than that. The Diamondbacks at 1,891. And to put full context, the team that's last, the Padres, 2,509 attempts. Okay. The Cardinals, again, 1,373. The Padres, 2,509. And it's not only about the stolen bases. It's the impact of having a catcher who literally shuts down a team's running game just as he steps on the field, which is why I got to myself thinking as I was preparing to talk to you today, I think players are going to explain his value much better than any numbers could as we get closer to that time when his name goes on the ballot. So someone like yourself can explain what that really means. It's not only about the stolen base attempts, it's all the ripple effects.
Well, Buster, what that underscores is that he is a transformational figure. It's that he's kind of reset the game where you have to go beyond the metrics. Even WAR, which is fairly modern, is not going to capture certain aspects of it. You could say defensive WAR, but there's elements of him where as an opponent coming into town, like, okay, I'm not running against the guy. It's like Pudge Rodriguez. It's like, okay, wait a minute. We got to rethink our running game right now. And you mentioned the numbers, the fact that there's lower attempts, but then it's on top of that is how many he throws out. This guy has a record setting caught stealing rate. So you don't run. And if you do, you're walking back to the dugout. So you're taking runners from putting themselves into scoring position and getting 90 feet closer to home plate. That is a big deal. When you have Adam Wainwrights and Chris Carpenters of the world, you have ground ball pitchers that know how to put the ball on the ground, and you have a double play in order or preserving the double play. You have runners that are not taking aggressive secondary leads from first base that lost one quick step, the difference between a cutoff and relay throwing someone out at home plate. I mean, these are the sort of subtle effects of what happens when you have a receiver. You're blocking balls out in the dirt. You're doing things to prevent and guard against the value offensively of being able to advance 90 feet without hitting the ball, without getting a hit. And that becomes even more critical in an era today, which is different from when he started, of shifting defenses where you're taking away singles. It's hard to get a base hit, and it's certainly hard to string three of them in a row. All right. So if you're not going to be able to chain together base hits and you're hitting balls on the ground, and you only have a runner on first base, that's a double play when you have a guy you can't run on. So it's the ability to shut all those smaller ways, I guess you could say, from moving 90 feet and advancing without swinging the bat. And Molina has been the complete general of that. So, and that's, some of his intangibles. And I'm sure, like you said, I think there'll be a lot of players that speak out and talk about his impact. And I think Hall of Fame voters, I think they're considerably more knowledgeable about the advanced analytics today, but it may take some coaxing, a little bit more time. But I think that time of marinating in his career will also will embrace and solidify what he means, which is why he's a surefire Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's going to get voted in the first time he's on the ballot, with voters hearing a lot from players about what his actual impact on the field has been. All right, let's talk about the wild card races. What do you see there?
I've been fascinated by the fact that, you've seen teams that were seemingly collapsing, like the Yankees, that were falling down, like the Mariners or whoever it may be. And then all of a sudden the surge happened with some of these teams. And you always, you know, you always talk about this anecdotally, like, well, it's whoever gets hot at the right time. Well, this season has been kind of a big circle around that, because if you look at the Yankees, you know, 11 in a row or rattling off these wins, going from sort of anonymity in some ways to now a serious contender. But they can't look over their shoulder because you have Mariners, you have Boston, you have teams like Oakland that are all, you know, hunting right there. I mean, you look at the AL East and you see all these teams, four teams effectively heading off this race. But then you look around and they're not comfortable at all. So it's interesting that to look at the dramatic way teams have swung their seasons, but the questions start to arise, is it too soon? Did they peak too soon? Do they have an equal losing streak in, you know, late September that's going to sink them? And because everything's upside down, the Padres, you're like, oh, the Padres are the best team. You know, Tatis, they're, and then you look up, Larry Rothschild, their pitching coach is fired. You look up, they're behind the Reds in the wild card race. They're on the outside looking in, and you just didn't really see that coming based on how well their pitching was doing early on and how well you had, you know, a legend in Tatis Jr. All of a sudden now they're battling teams just to get in it. So I've just been fascinated by the speed at which things have turned upside down. And I'm curious to see, is that going to be true in September, and who's going to have the right pieces and the health to go with it, or someone coming back from injury like a Chris Sale to be able to say, this is going to push us over the finish line.
I feel like I have to remind myself of this every year when we, you know, project how the wildcard races are going to play out. These are all inherently flawed teams. Like, as the Yankees are streaking, they don't know who's going to pitch the ninth inning in the last week of September. The Red Sox yesterday, Alex Cora basically came out and said that, you know, that the ninth inning is open. He's going to try to figure out what to do with Matt Barnes. When I saw Oakland play the other day, it's pretty clear that their pitching staff is on fumes, like a lot of staffs this time of year, because the innings have sort of mounted up and Seattle's got some momentum, but they're young and they haven't been through it. So these are not perfect teams this time of year.
Well, and Buster, to your point, that's what makes the White Sox really interesting. They went out and bought so much depth in the pitching. They have like all these guys that could close, Kimbrel, Hendricks, you could put Tapera, whatever. I mean, they really solidified that back end of the bullpen when teams are imploding. And what's interesting about that is, you know, think about the last few years. You know, we used to go into spring training covering the game or playing and saying, here's my closer. And it was like a pride thing. You had a bona fide, labeled, marked closer. That's your job. And you had to win that job. There's seasons now you go in, teams aren't even telling you who their closer. They're like, yeah, whatever, we'll see what happens. And the Rays certainly showed that, you know, last year. So you recognize that that's probably why the Red Sox, Yankees aren't going to necessarily fully panic. Yes, they'd like to have the sure thing. But they know that, okay, maybe it is about a matchup thing, but the teams like the White Sox are even more comfortable because they know that they have all different weapons that could close out ball games. And I think the teams that have that kind of depth are going to have a huge advantage going into the end of this season.
Yeah, and the White Sox with the luxury of being able to rest everybody down the stretch and prime them for the month of October, that'll be fascinating. I'm also, as we move along here and we see how the wild card race are playing out, the idea of a Red Sox Yankee wild card game, that would be crazy. You
know? Without doubt. Rivalry is, I mean, one of the best. And I think that's what makes it exciting. Curious to see, you know, how the playoff format shifts over time in the next coming years, because there's some great rivalries that could happen on the first round of the playoffs in the wild card.
No question. Doug, thanks for doing this.
All right, Buster. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, Paul Imbecchietti is a researcher at ESPN. He's a honcho on the show Get Up. He says he's a head honcho, and Mike Greenberg has advised us otherwise. Hembo, how are you doing today?
Buster, I am doing extremely well this morning, working from home and really taking things to a new low today. I'm going to be starting very shortly when I pop off the podcast here. A couple of racks of ribs in the smoker very early in the morning. I'm just taking all these liberties at this point. Working from home has become so normal now that I'm essentially just jeopardizing my career. But you know what? I think ribs are the best food in the world. And I'd imagine growing up on a farm, you agree.
I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to give my opinion on ribs. Not my favorite things. What I feel like is going on, you're trying to distract from what's going on with your Phillies. Okay. That's really what's gone. This is comfort food for you because we all thought the Phillies would take advantage of that soft schedule, and no, they're drifting.
What happened last night crushed me. I think Zach Wheeler's Cy Young chances just absolutely vanquished with that ridiculous 0-2 pitch to Francisco Mejia. He hit his spot though. Like for some reason, JT Realmuto felt like it was a wise idea to throw a belt high fastball out over the plate 0-2. So you get what you pay for. That was a devastating loss for this team. And I think like when we sort of write the postscript here for the Phillies this season, that's going to be one of those games that really stands out. And on the other side, it just demonstrates how incredibly good the Rays are when it matters. The Rays own a plus 50 run differential, Buster, in the ninth inning alone. It is completely absurd what those guys do late in games. And as a Phillies fan, I really tasted it last night.
Yeah, I love the Rays tweet that they sent out last night that they're on pace, which is not something you hear from teams very often, but they're on pace to win 100 games, which just tells you, again, you know, just how good that team is. I wanted to get your thoughts on Yadier Molina. First off, do you believe that next year will actually be his last year? Because when I heard that, I was like, yeah, right. He'll catch another year after that.
My inclination is to say yes. At least it will be his last year for the Cardinals. The way that the Cardinals sort of announced it made it seem like we love Yadi, and next year is his last year with us. I suppose if he played really well next season, there's no obvious reason why, so long as his health is there, he wouldn't want to play elsewhere. I think there's something magical sort of about baseball's mystique when you play two decades for the same team and no one else. That's definitely been a thing over the years. But it would stun me if he played in 2023 for the Cardinals, but it wouldn't stun me if he played in 2023 for someone else.
All right. What else do you have on Yadi?
Well, Buster, I think it just provides us an opportunity to sort of put his career in perspective. And the reason for it is because his sort of Hall of Fame candidacy has been a topic of much debate on the internet. And that's because he's produced about 40 wins above replacement, 40 WAR for his career. But I've yet to talk to a single person whose opinion I value around the game that thinks that's a good approximation for the value that he provides, Buster. And I'll give you two reasons why I think that number comes up short. The first of which is, since Molina became the Cardinals' everyday catcher in 2005, you had me track this note for years now. St. Louis has allowed 830 stolen bases, which is 379 fewer than any other team. And thus, it should come as no surprise that during that time, the Cardinals lead all of baseball in double plays turned. A bunch of those are courtesy of Yadi. And secondly, his career ERA as a catcher is 3.69. If you look at all other Cardinals catchers since 2005, that's 4.18. That is a massive gap. It's a gap equivalent to the difference between ranking second and 16th in team ERA during that time, or better yet, the difference between the careers of Mike Mussina and Freddie Garcia, half a run per game, Buster. So if I told you that Yadi's defense was worth half a run per game, would you laugh me out of the room?
Absolutely not. Look, here's the thing, and I just talked to Doug Glanville about this. I really feel like as we get closer to the voting on Molina, that the most important voices are going to be those of ex-players and current players. Like a lot of times, you know, when we talk about a player like Miguel Cabrera, any nerd like me can go on the internet and find numbers and say, yeah, Miguel Cabrera is amazing. But I think that we're going to need players, former players, you know, guys like Chris Carpenter to talk about and hear their voices and have them explain exactly what it means to have your team allow almost half the number of stolen base attempts as compared to the Padres during the career. And what that means for a pitcher, the peace of mind for a pitcher standing out on the mound where he doesn't even have to worry about the guy at first base. You know what? They're not going to run on him.
I think our catcher evaluation is decades away from being a science. And I think Yadier Molina's case is a perfect example of that. The only thing I'll add is only two catchers have ever been inducted on the first ballot, Johnny Bench and Pudge Rodriguez. So there are all sorts of people that seem to think Yadi is going to add his name to that list, but history says he's got an uphill climb.
All right. Tell me about an elite hitter we don't recognize the way that we should.
His name is Yordan Alvarez for the Astros, and I, for the life of me, can't figure out why we don't just consider this guy a freaking superstar. Buster, he is one of three players in the history of baseball who, through 200 career games, which is exactly where he's at right now, has 50 home runs and 50 doubles. The other two are Chuck Kline and Joe DiMaggio. Both did so before World War II. He is the best hitter on the best lineup in baseball by a long shot. He's anchoring it at the age of 24. I don't have much else to add except for the fact that if you're putting together a list of the best young players in baseball and he's not on it, it's just not a credible list.
What do you got in the San Francisco Giants? Just keep on rolling.
Their fans are not tweeting me on a weekly basis complaining that I'm not talking about them on the podcast enough. And you know what? They're right, because they just keep winning and I've not been able to figure out how. So I really dug into it this week. Let me know what you think. Number one, Buster, they hit when they have to. By OPS, the Giants own the 14th best batting line in baseball with the game tied, the 7th best batting line in baseball with a lead, but they own the best batting line in baseball, an OPS of 784 when trailing within a game. Number two, their pitching and defense are just in sync. The Giants pitching staff owns the highest ground ball rate in baseball, 47%, and despite that volume, their defense ranks 4th in baseball and converting ground balls into outs at about 76%. And three, that pitching staff is the most efficient in all of baseball. Giants pitchers average about 16 pitches per inning. That's the fewest in the majors. And that is in large part because they're the most aggressive pitching staff in baseball. They own a first pitch strike rate of 64%. You guessed it. That's highest in baseball.
So on September 5th, we've got the Dodgers and we've got the Giants on Sunday Night Baseball. So I'm going to steal all of that from you before San Francisco next week.
We'll run it back.
Last one. Tell me what you got on the Orioles. We're celebrating today for Taylor, for guys like Trey Mancini, for Brandon Hyde, that this awful losing streak is over.
I saw a really funny note yesterday where if you decided over the course of each of the games to bet against the Orioles to win, you would have wound up winning, like if you put $100 on each Orioles game, you would have made $290,000 during that win streak. So like that's definitely a missed opportunity for me because I could have moved from New Jersey to, I don't know, somewhere, you know, in your palatial area of Connecticut. But what I would also say is it really underscores the risk of tanking the way that you do. So a lot of teams sort of have gotten away with this over the course of time. Like we know teams have torn it down to the bare bones and have been able to get away with it. But when you go on a losing streak and you don't win a game for 3 weeks, it is humiliating to the organization. You lose fans potentially forever. And I think that's what this week demonstrates. I mean, the Orioles payroll is $220 million less than the Dodgers. That is an absolutely preposterous disparity that Major League Baseball must get to the bottom of as soon as it possibly can, namely before the next collective bargaining agreement. Because it is if a team loses 19 consecutive games, so be it. But if it loses 19 consecutive games, and we can all agree that they're not really trying to field a competitive product and thus impacts the balance of power in the pennant race, that's something that we need to do a better job of getting to the bottom of and ensuring it doesn't happen in the future as best we can. So to me, that's what, you know, sort of my big picture takeaway here. They embarrassed themselves and they deserve to be embarrassed, and Major League Baseball should do whatever it possibly can to remedy it. And I do wish that I had those $290,000 not betting against the Orioles 19 games in a row.
Yeah, and to put a couple of your numbers into context, you mentioned their payroll. I've said this before and I'll say it again. Remember, about 40% of that payroll is because of Chris Davis, who hasn't played the team in a couple of years. And if you subtract him from the payroll, the Orioles are paying their major league roster less than what the Yankees are paying Gerrit Cole. Okay? That's for the entire roster. And the second thing is, 19-game losing streak, they lost by an average of 5.7 runs per game in a 19-game losing streak. That's not Major League Baseball.
No.
You know, that's running, the University of Alabama up against Podunk State day after day after day. That's not representative of a product. And look, if you're going to charge fans prices, major league prices, you've got to give them a major league product. And a team that's losing 19 straight games by an average of 5.7 runs per game, that's embarrassing for the sport. All right, Hembo, thanks for doing this.
Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo. Right.
0096.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, I was thinking about you and your mom last night watching that Giants and Mets game playing out. The Mets getting their guts ripped out in the seventh inning. Taijuan Walker throwing a water bottle. He obviously unhappy. The Mets are, you know, this is a critical time for them. The Giants continuing to play well. What's the dynamic when a game like that is going on between you being a Mets fan and your mom being a big Giants fan?
Well, I have to say, we were at the game last night, so that dynamic was playing out in our section. My mother is such an incredible fan. She was so stressed out in that ninth inning. All I wanted was for the Giants to win because I did not want her to be upset. I mean, you know, this was their first game, my parents' first game since September 2019. We went to a Marlins-Mets game back then, but we hadn't gotten to a game at any point yet this year. This was the first time I was able to get some great tickets, and we went. And all I wanted was for my mom to see her team, which is the best team in baseball, win a game. That is all I wanted as we walked into Citi Field. And she was so stressed out when Jake McGee walked Brandon Nimmo. I have never seen her slap her thigh so hard. She was so stressed out. And after the game, she kept apologizing for how emotional she was. And I said, no, this is amazing. This is what baseball is about, bringing out those emotions. So everything you are imagining was happening in the stands at Citi Field last night.
That boy, what fun.
Yes.
What fun that must have been, you know, watch your mom's passion. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
So number three is 5:30. So speaking of the Giants, Brandon Crawford, you know, we saw in person last night, and we talked about him, you and I think a couple weeks ago. And I want to check back in on a stat that I mentioned then and some other stuff with his season. So he continues to have this incredible season. Did it merit taking out Taijuan Walker there? I'm not so sure. But regardless, Brandon Crawford is going to get MVP votes. He is having a season unlike any season he's ever had in his career. So to that point, he's slugging 530. He entered the 2021 season with a 392 career slugging percentage. That is very, very different than the season he is having this year. And only three players in AL and NL history have slugged 500 or better in a season at age 34 or older, after entering the year with a career slugging percentage under 400. So he is on pace to do that. He's been up there pretty much all year. And if you take a look at what he's doing, I mean, it sounds so simple, right? But he's hitting the ball really hard, much harder than he's ever done under Statcast tracking. And he has a career low ground ball percentage. So it just seems like the Giants have really unlocked this idea, you know, swing a little bit up more and hit the ball harder. And it's going to, you know, end up a lot better for him. So
number two.
I don't even know which number to pick for this game last night, this Padres-Dodgers game, which came home and watched that. But there were five scoreless complete innings in that game. So you asked me about this morning. Five innings where neither team scored in the extra innings with that runner on second. Obviously, we had not seen a game even close to this long under those rules. The prior longest game was 13 innings. There had been two games that went 13 this year, two games that went 13 last year. This game went 16 innings for anybody who was asleep, like you probably should have been during this game. So before last night, the most scoreless complete innings, so the top and the bottom of the inning in extras that had happened under these rules was three. And that was a game on August 7th, 2020, between the Astros and the A's. I remember watching this game. It was early under the new rules. And I remember thinking, how is nobody scoring here? So in the 10th, 11th, and 12th inning of that game, neither team scored. And then in the 13th, they both scored and the A's walked it off. That was the only time that there had been even more than two complete scoreless innings at any point under these rules. And of course, we got five last night. So just completely not what we are used to under these rules. We hadn't seen a 16th inning since September 24th, 2019. There were actually two games that went that long on that date, but obviously that was before there was a runner on second.
Number one.
So number one is 521, and that's what AJ Pollock is slugging this year. And I don't even know, again, if that's the best number to call out here, but you know, you mentioned to me, he's having a really underrated season, and he is. So I just want to talk about everything that he's doing this year. So he slugged 566 last year, and I think we started to see the beginnings of the player he's looked at like this year, but he's never slugged even above 500 in any season of his career. Even when he got MVP votes back in 2015, that was 498 slugging. He hit 315 this year, but I would say that this season he's having is most similar to that. He was 14th in MVP. It wasn't like he was getting serious consideration, and he won't necessarily this year either, but everything that he's doing on that Dodgers team that has at times really struggled, I think that he's been sort of a bit of a constant there. And I always look at stuff like, how hard are you hitting the ball? He has a 48% hard hit rate. So almost half the time this season, he is making at least 95 mile an hour exit velocity contact. He's never been even close to that in his career. So kind of similar to Crawford. He just seems to have unlocked something completely different. And by the way, also at age 34. So really cool to see that, especially from a guy like Pollock, who had so many, you know, injuries and things that sort of hampered his seasons over the last handful of years. It's really great to see him thriving for that team that has needed some offense with Cody Bellinger not playing great and Mookie Betts been hurt and also not that great this year. So it's good to see that coming from maybe a little bit more unexpected of a source.
So I watched the first couple of innings of the Dodgers and Padres last night, but then I did go to bed and I wound up waking up at 4:45, which was just, you know, not long after the completion of that game. You were up and watching that whole game after getting back from Citi Field?
Yep. Had some late second dinner after the nachos in the stands. Had some additional food when we got back, and watching that game, it was pretty crazy. I mean, I remember looking up at the out-of-town scoreboard and being kind of bummed there was only one 10 o'clock game last night, so I wasn't going to get to watch a lot of baseball other than the baseball that I saw in front of me, which is, of course, the best way to take it in. And then that game ended up giving all of us plenty of baseball, even with the 1:10 piece start.
That's awesome. All right, Sarah, talk to you next week.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher tweets for a Thursday. We've got Lewis Adio Weiss at Adio underscore Lewis 00. Lewis writes in, beyond the 14 strikeout game Wednesday, is Robbie Ray a legit contender for AL Cy Young entering Wednesday's start? He leads all AL pitchers in baseball reference WAR and has pitched well in a division ballpark far more competitive than Lynn in the Central.
I do think that it's still wide open. The Cy Young Award in both leagues at this point, and it's going to come down to who pitches best down the stretch. So, but Robbie Ray definitely setting himself up, by the way, for free agency in the fall with this nice season.
And last one for Joseph at Joey Bats 1988. Joseph writes in, salary floors might lessen tanking, but teams also need a reason not to tank. Expanded playoffs? How might a 16 seed bracket look? Division winners are the 1-3 seeds, then 4-8 seeded by record. This would be fun. Still really sad we didn't get expanded playoffs. That's my note there. This would have been the perfect year for it. There's so much parity in baseball right now. It's a true bummer that they didn't get this done. Hopefully next year.
Well, and it's interesting because the Player Association in its, and I use the word posturing because I think there's a lot of posturing going on both sides. Their feeling is that expanded playoffs would lessen the incentive for teams to upgrade their rosters, feeling like, you know what, we can make the playoffs even if we don't spend money on this particular player. I don't know if they necessarily believe that any more than Rob Manfred saying, we're going to get away from 7-inning doubleheaders. That's, you know, I think a lot of it is posturing for negotiations. I think in 2022 that we are going to have a 14-team playoff field. I don't know if I'm ready to bet the family farm on that, but I would say I think there's a good chance that's going to happen.
All righty. That does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Doug, Sarah, Hembo, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight Podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.